Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
At bat win for the Braves, 16 victories in their final turn. The lineup got to Josh Donaldson. He drives.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com live inside the Kia Studios right now on the late night show. Thomas Mott hanging out with Will Pelagic, Dylan Matthews producing as well. There you just heard it, Will. Chip Carey on the call from Fox Sports South, and the Braves bail Luke Jackson out big time with the walk-off win.
Don't you feel like those reporters sitting in the press box with the game story already tidily written,
ready to go,
and then about 20 minutes before you and I come on the air, Luke Jackson gets whiplash, gives up a two-run homer, and all of a sudden it seemed like the story had to be deleted, although a nice rally by the Braves in the bottom of the ninth inning to get the victory and stop the skid. But the problems that have plagued the Braves for much of this season, again, there haven't been many, but the one big one is the bullpen, and the main offender is Luke Jackson. And as a result of that, he takes the blown save and then vultures himself a win, because that's the way baseball works.
Braves win 3-2-4 as, again, Luke Jackson's ERA still currently sits at a whopping 3.16, and it's his 17th save of the season. We'll jump into what's happening around the world of sports here in just a second. We'll go through the entire Braves, as well as a quick preview for Atlanta United. Listen, three-hour show, not a solo show, right? I'm with Will Pelagic again, as we're going to ride with you guys until 2 a.m., and it's an absolutely jam-packed show, Will, and you and I were going back and forth on what we wanted to talk about. Listen, Falcons heading into training camp. Obviously, massive storylines there. We'll start with that in about 16 minutes. And then we also need to get into its own segment. The Tyreek Hill situation that happened in the National Football League today is, I don't know if I can say disheartening. I don't know if I want to say surprising. I don't know if I want to say exactly what we expected. There's so much to get into in terms of that. We'll talk about that later as well.
Unfortunate for all parties involved.
There you go. I like that a lot.
Unfortunate for all parties involved, and a situation where there are no winners. And unfortunately, I saw a lot of people either connected with the Chiefs or Chiefs fans who were celebrating today. I don't know if that necessarily was done in the best taste.
Well, and I don't either. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later on the show. At 929 The Game to follow the station. At Real Thomas Mott to give me a follow. At Willie P. Style to give Will a follow as well. Top of the first hour. We normally do this on my show, Ready or Mott. It's a perfect time to do it then. What's happening in the world of sports? Let's jump right into it. Are you ready? Let's go. We just mentioned it, Will, but the Braves did get a win 4-3 over the Washington Nationals. We talked about the latter half of that game, but there was a lot going on early on, and we got to start with Julio Teheran's 5 2/3, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts. You and I were both watching this game beforehand. Teheran had an excellent outing.
He did, and it was exactly what the Braves needed off of a night where they basically had blown their bullpen, and obviously the last couple of nights have not been good for them with a couple of lopsided losses. And as a result, Atlanta rebounds thanks to some heady pitching from Julio Teheran. He had everything working. I think a lot of people thought that maybe he could have been pulled a little bit later. The fact that he only threw 83 pitches. He was taken out situationally because of the fact that there were men on, but Jerry Blevins was able to shut the door and keep the lead at that point, picking up his seventh hold. You get nice seventh and eighth innings out of Sabatka and Swarzak. But now you wonder, again, like we said before, you know, how much longer can you afford to trot out Luke Jackson, his seventh blown save? And in my mind, you know, when you're looking at the needs of this ball club, closer is one. I still think starter is 1A or 1B, depending on how you signify these two. But, you know, every time it seems like Luke Jackson takes the mound, you're putting your life in your hands.
Well, I mentioned this to you right before we went on the air. As I'm sitting here going, and John Chuckery mentioned it as well, this, you can get away with this stuff against the Nationals and the Marlins and a bunch of the lesser squads in the MLB. My big fear, if they decide to not make a move and ride Luke Jackson for the rest of the season, which I think would be absolutely crazy, but let's just say they did, what would it be like in Atlanta?
Look at tonight.
Literally. No.
Yeah, look at tonight.
I mean, talk about tonight minus this, you know, maybe a walk-off home run by the Braves win. If we get into the postseason and Luke Jackson's pitching and blowing games in the postseason, the town is going to erupt because it's still July.
Well, here's the other thing that you have to factor in is that when you get to the playoffs, you're not going to face hitters like Victor Robles. No offense to Victor Robles. He hit 14 home runs this year, and that was his 14th off of Luke Jackson. But you're going to face tougher hitters than Victor Robles in these situations. And on the flip side of that, you're not going to see Fernando Rodney on the other side. You're going to see guys like Kenley Jansen and big-time closers with filthy breaking stuff. You're not going to be able to pull the kind of rabbit out of the hat like you did tonight. The Nationals, I still think, are a below-the-ledger playoff team. I think they've gotten hot very recently against some weaker competition. I think that they certainly have stood up to the Braves and said that they're not afraid, and the Braves kind of let them back into this one as a result of what, again, seems to be a position that Atlanta can't seem to solve.
Washington 6.5 games back after the loss tonight to the Braves, but I mentioned this on my show a couple days ago, right? So this is only game two of a four-game series at home. Then the Braves are going to go back out on, or no, they have two more at home, and then they go back out on the road at Philadelphia. But then you come back and play at Washington for three more games. And I said, I think at the start of this series, we were 7 games up or 6.5 games up or whatever it was. If you let the Nationals creep back in over the next couple of weeks, this could be a 4-game lead very, very quickly. And suddenly, the NL East is back to being a division race, and the Braves are going to have to hold on versus where we're at right now, where it's like, oh, we were 7, oh, we were 8, oh, it was 9 at one point. No. Like, you got to take care of business now.
I figured going into this, you probably needed to take 3 out of 4 of this series, given the stretch coming up. I still don't believe in the free-falling Phillies. I think that they are still a team that continues to tailspin. I do believe that you should be able to get work done in Washington, but at the very least, you needed at least a split, if not a series win outright against Washington, with another series against them looming. But like you said, the decisions that need to be made before July 31st will have to be made a lot clearer by the fact that we get two more series inside the division to figure out where you're positioned headed for the final stretch run.
Continuing on here, what's happening around the world of sports. I want to finish quickly with this, and you just tied it up really, really well. If they hadn't gotten the walk-off, you know, single by Donaldson, let's say Luke Jackson blows a save and is credited with the loss here, does it make them a little bit more, you know, buy happy in terms of, does the front office go, all right, we really have to make a move?
I don't think those decisions are made based off of one game.
Okay.
I think you take a longer sample size into the effect, and trust me, we've seen enough, I believe, and I think Braves fans have too.
Hopefully we have. Again, moving on here on what's happening around the world of sports. Atlanta United, thank goodness, got back on track against the Houston Dynamo with that 5-1, or 5-0 win just on Wednesday. Well, listen, that was a nice win. We loved it. You and I both watched that match. Absolutely fantastic. Righted the ship. And then Sunday, DC United comes in, a 3:30 pregame, a 4 p.m. kickoff. DC United, this is going to be, if you win, right, if Atlanta United wins, they could have a share of the Eastern Conference lead, depending on what Philadelphia does.
Yeah, this was interesting looking at the way that the last couple of weeks framed up. Obviously, the loss in Seattle was very disappointing, and obviously people had a lot of high hopes going into that, but you didn't lose the kind of stature in the table that you thought you were going to based off of that outright defeat, the fact that you couldn't at least steal a point on the road. And you got a very, very weak playing Houston team coming in, a team that struggled on the road and really hasn't gotten its offense together. Their defense has never been necessarily one that you would look at and say is impenetrable. And I think, too, you caught a team at the right time, and Atlanta needed that victory at the right time because they needed to get some offensive confidence back. I know that they were able to gain some in the Open Cup victory over St. Louis, but playing an MLS side, they needed this victory. And now it's funny, off of the game they played a couple weeks ago against the Red Bulls, I even think that this game is even bigger because of the fact United comes in with a lot of confidence. They've been playing very, very well lately. Wayne Rooney, of course, we all know the story there. And it does seem like this game could go a long way determining exactly who has the momentum for Atlanta United's own stretch run.
Our own Joe Patrick, obviously our Braves reporter here, but he writes for DirtySouthSoccer.com, and he reported, I think, this morning that Ezequiel Barco has returned to the training pitch. Today? And I think Frank DeBoer is expecting him to maybe get into some action soon, as well as Ambrose could all be back on the field this weekend, and this could be interesting to get, especially Barco back out there.
Yeah, Barco and George Bello all both back today. Bello's still probably a couple of days away, a couple of matches away from getting back to form, but Barco would be a big addition back to, again, the a back line that's needed at least a little bit more reinforcements there.
And finally, let's go ahead and finish with the Open Championship. J.B. Holmes is leading it, tied with Shane Lowry for the lead up there. 8 under currently. Brooks Koepka was in second after yesterday. He shot a 69 today, but the leaders went out with 68 and 67. Brooks Koepka tied for 8th, 5 shots back. A lot of big names at the top of the leaderboard there at the Open Championship. Tommy Fleetwood, even Lee Westwood, a very veteran golfer there, but obviously familiar with that part of the world. He's sitting there tied for 3rd at 7 under as well. You watching this one? You got to get up early.
Oh, you have to watch it early. You have to get up early and watch it. I did catch a little bit of it over the first couple of days. People talk about who's at the top of the leaderboard, but a lot of people talking about who is not there. And obviously, Phil Mickelson, Roy McIlroy, and Tiger Woods all missing the cut. And it's the first time ever, Thomas, if you can believe it, that both Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson each have started a major tournament and both have not made the cut.
Tiger Woods shoots a 78 on Thursday, a 70 today, finishes plus 6 over, tied for 148. And this Masters win that everyone gave me hell over after I said Tiger would never win another major starts to look more like a fluke.
Stop it.
But,
stop
ever since.
There's nothing fluky about it.
Okay,
he won the tournament.
Fluke is a bad word. But it's very likely his final major of his career.
The course and a limited field sets up perfectly for him, and also its positioning in the schedule because he can use the long layoff to train. And again, he talked about this a lot with the fact that he's getting older. He can't devote as much time to practice. He has to, you know, really kind of put himself on a, for lack of a better word, pitch count. So because of that, I think that the way that the new major schedule is situated, the fact that you're playing one major every month, he's basically going in and trying to pull off something very, very difficult for somebody at his age and where his physical strengths are because of the way his back is.
Go ahead and end what's happening around the world of sports. Quick break here, back in about 6 minutes. Falcons report to training camp on Monday, Will. The storylines are abounding. We got plenty to talk about in terms of getting you ready for Falcons training camp again on Monday. Keep it right here. We're rolling along live inside the Kia Studios. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Back inside the Kia Studios, it is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, along with Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic here with you. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you as we continue on the phone lines at 404-741-0929 and also on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line as we continue on a Friday going into Saturday. Braves victorious 4-3. They get themselves back in the win column after a loss to Washington and a little bit of a skid. We'll get back into them here in just a moment and also tell you about probably the biggest story in the National Football League about 15 minutes from now involving one of the fastest men in all of football. But here locally, you can feel the excitement, Thomas. We are two sleeps away.
Two. That's it.
Two sleeps away from training camp opening in Flowery Branch. It's a little bit earlier for us here in Atlanta because of the Hall of Fame game against Denver. Denver's already opened camp themselves, already had an injury also to their squad.
Oh, wait, I did not see this.
This was earlier this week. They opened, I believe, on Wednesday, Wednesday or Thursday, and they've already had somebody kind of go down with an injury. It was Todd Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Inside linebacker. Yep. He missed three to four weeks with the calf strain. So those are the perils of opening camp early, though. Again, they say injuries can happen at any time, but you kind of wonder if teams will start to kind of, again, you know, it almost feels like the first one or two injuries, teams kind of wheel it back, but I think the one thing that was very encouraging, and again, it's been a while since you and I have hooked up together, and I found myself completely shocked in the best way by the moves that Atlanta made over the course of this week, locking up Grady Jarrett, locking up Debo Deion Jones. I think those two things show a commitment from the Atlanta Brain Trust toward this franchise, toward its best players. And I think, too, once you get Julio Jones locked up again beyond for another deal beyond the next couple, I think this at least takes care of all of your long-term business when it comes to the Falcons.
I was 100%, I have to agree, because you sat there, and I remember the day of, whenever they signed Grady a couple days ago on the 15th, Adam Schefter had tweeted that morning from ESPN that they were not close and they were not talking. And so I sat there going, oh boy, here we go. They're not going to get a deal done. Grady's going to play for 1 year and then leave. And then, literally an hour before the deadline, or an hour and a half before the 4 p.m. deadline, they get a four-year, $68 million contract done. And then shortly after, Deion Jones was locked up. And I talked about this on my show a couple days ago. They did the right thing by not doing Julio first.
Correct.
And I think a lot of people were sitting there going, oh, well, Julio, you know, it's Julio Jones, right? The best receiver in the league. He's our guy.
Well, I think,
lock him down.
I think they did. They also know with him, and they know he's going to be there on Monday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's not that I don't think that Grady and Deion weren't, but the fact is that you know that Julio is a team guy. He is a guy who is looked at as a leader on this football team. And the other part of this, too, is that they're basically working on word from the top, from Arthur Blank, that basically saying, look, this is going to get done. We have to figure out how to work the numbers with the cap. Once they work the numbers out with the cap, then they can structure a deal based on their parameters. Once they have everything else done that they wanted to get done this offseason, and again, better late than never. It's funny how they say deadlines cause action. As a result of that, now either you can take this again through a couple of weeks of training camp or maybe even into the season, but regardless, if you're Julio Jones right now, you have to be feeling pretty good about what is around you, because this is not just about Julio. This is about what's around him, because he's as important to this offense as Matt Ryan or anybody.
Well, and what they did is they showed us, and like you mentioned in the very beginning, they showed us where their priority is, and they decided, essentially, to follow suit on what a lot of the elite teams, the National Football League, have been doing as of late, getting, well, one, drafting a star defensive tackle. Not easy to do, but it's been happening. Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox. You draft a star defensive tackle, you pay him the money that he wants, and then he anchors the center of your defense for the next 4, 5, 6 years, depending on how long you spend on him. This is such an important position in the National Football League today. And I said on my show again, keep referencing back to this one segment that I did, I said the Grady deal is more important than the Julio Jones deal. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think anyone would be able to call in right now and make an argument saying that they would rather have Julio Jones for the next 4 years than Grady Jarrett. Grady Jarrett's younger, and he plays a more important position in the National Football League. As great as a wide receiver as Julio Jones is, it matters more to have that stud defensive tackle than it does that great wide receiver. And we've seen it year in and year out where great wide receivers don't go to Super Bowls.
Well, I think it's not just that, Thomas. It's harder to restart at that position than it is to restart at wide receiver. I think that's the main part of it, is that, you know, you can pick up defensive linemen. You can pick up space keepers. You can get guys who are going to clog at the middle. But to find somebody with the athleticism of Jarrett is a rare find. You know, think about Quinnen Williams and why he was taken so highly by the New York Jets. That's the kind of player that we're talking about here with Jarrett. And it also, not only does it tell you about where they value Jarrett, but it also tells you where they do not value Vic Beasley, because it seems now that with Jarrett re-signed, they basically kind of picked between those two, and they said, okay, you know, regardless of what happens with Vic Beasley, unless he comes out and obviously doesn't necessarily tear the cover off of things when it comes to this upcoming season and signs a team-friendly deal to re-sign on, like, basically a one-year prove-it deal, it seems to me like he'll have played his last bit of football in an Atlanta Falcons uniform by the end of the 2019 season.
Well, and we're talking about right now the Falcons getting ready for training camp on Monday, just two sleeps away until we're actually up at Flowery Branch. Plenty of coverage here on 92.9, but the players are going to be there, and they're getting to work, and the season starts, right? And so the Grady deal's great. The Deion Jones deal's great. We both agree that Julio is coming. I was surprised that it didn't happen today, honestly. I really thought that they would have it done before training camp. Now, it could happen tomorrow. I mean, it could happen on Sunday. I just figured they would lock it up that way. Everyone's happy as you went to training camp. But the other big storylines going into this year's offseason or this year's training camp, for me, if I'm looking forward to training camp and trying to zero in on one position group that I am fascinated to learn more about and to see if they can get better, stays on the defensive line at the defensive end. And it's so cliche to say, talk about Tack and to talk about Vic Beasley, but if they don't go, if they don't cause havoc, if they don't get sacks and quarterback hits this year, the defense is going to struggle. And it's that simple.
I will take you similar vein on the other side of the football, though.
Hey.
Offensive line is my intrigue point. I mean, I would be, if I was up at Flowery Branch on Monday, I am sitting in front of the big uglies and seeing what Chris Lindstrom is made of, what Caleb McGarry is made of, what kind of strides they've made since mandatory minicamp, how James Carpenter fits in between Jake Matthews and Alex Mack, you know, whether Mack and Matthews can kind of get themselves back on the same page, because, you know, those are two guys who are, again, I would say, I don't want to say all pros, but the guys who have that kind of potential as offensive linemen. And, you know, this unit last year got Matt Ryan hit almost as many times in his career as he has at all. So as a result, that is the one point that I think if you're going to have any modicum of success this year for the Atlanta Falcons, keeping Matt Ryan upright is foremost among them, because despite the fact that he had a season last year that mirrored the MVP season when they went to the Super Bowl, it was not real. The potential of this team was not realized because Matt Ryan spent too much time on his back.
I remember whenever I went to my first training camp back at a station that you were hosting at today, WFNZ and Charlotte, the flagship of the Panthers. I got to go to Spartanburg and cover one Panthers training camp there, which was absolutely fantastic.
Please tell me you stopped at the Beacon Drive-In.
I did not stop at the Beacon Drive-In. No, I did not. I drove like through the night to get there because I drove from Charlotte. It's like, you know, 3-4 hours. I remember asking a couple players there who were doing interviews with us, and I said, all right, it's training camp. We always hear the reporters writing stories about, ooh, you know, the offense looked good today. Ooh, you know, the defense looked good today. Who should be winning on these 11-on-11s? And he said, listen, the defense should be winning.
Yes,
the defense is not winning,
it's a problem.
It's a problem. If you hear it during training camp, and you guys can listen to this because day by day, the AJC, and of course our guys here at 92.9, they will give you practice-by-practice updates. And if you're reading, you know, Matt Ryan throws interception, or Matt Ryan, you know, is flushed out of the pocket, or the run game's not there, that's what you should be hearing.
You know why that is?
Matt Ryan's carving it up, bad. That's bad news, right?
You know why that is? It's because it's much easier to react to what's happening in front of you than it is to be the one who's the initiator. And that's, I think, something when it comes to a lot of these teams, too. Even the most offensively oriented teams, when you think about college teams and spring, teams that are offensively oriented, still don't always look complete and whole because they don't have their full install all the way in. And I think the same goes for the offensive side of the football in the NFL. While they might do a lot of their install in the off season and in some of these non-mandatory camps and even some of the mandatory mini camps before they hit August and July, it's still a work in progress as you go throughout the process. And the other part of this is that you do not, and that's the other thing, you do not at any point in time want to show your hand in the preseason. Everything that you're going to see run in the preseason is vanilla, as you know what. I mean, it is going to be literally bluebell vanilla ice cream, baby, with the dots. Like, that's what it's going
to
look like.
And when both of us mention, you know, to me it's defensive line, especially defensive end. To you, it's the offensive line. Preseason's not going to tell us if those are going to be strong suits or weak points in the season, right? It will be week one at Minnesota on September 8th. We'll sit there and we will, I mean, at least the offensive side, because the defense can get rolling and sacks can come in different bunches. But if Matt Ryan's getting thrown around week one, Matt Ryan's probably going to get thrown around week four, week seven, week eight.
The other thing, too, that we will not see is that we won't see what kind of polish Dirk Koetter is going to put on this and this offense, because I think, too, there are a lot of people who are mad about the Steve Sarkisian tenure when it comes to his time here in Atlanta. They feel like he set the Atlanta offense back a couple of years, and despite the fact that Ryan had those successful numbers it was a result almost despite Sarkisian, which, again, makes me feel a little queasy about Sarkisian in Alabama, which is a segment, or is a subject for another segment. But in my mind, you know, Cutter being back in Atlanta, I think, lends itself to at least this offense going forward. And the other part of this, too, that we haven't talked about much, but we talked about a little bit, is the fact that this staff now around Dan Quinn has so many former head coaches in the room with him that there's going to be more of a collaborative effort to see what's going on. I feel like, again, you know, the staff can't win you the football game, but I want to say they probably have put together the smartest staff and most experienced staff of anybody outside of, say, New England.
Yeah, and at the same time, listen, they can't win you a football game. They can definitely help you get to that goal. At the same time, though, we've seen staffs in the National Football League that have been put very, very well together. But if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. It's as simple as that. But like we said, going into Monday, as we go through this first week of training camp, the storylines to watch for you and I are defensive line, offensive line. At the same time, though, don't buy into defense won today, offense won today. Matt Ryan looked good, Matt Ryan looked bad. Don't buy into any of that, because I know we do. And I, as a fan growing up in the National Football League for my team, oh my goodness, I read every single reporter saying, so-and-so quarterback, 3 touchdowns today, no picks. And then he'd throw 3 picks the next day. You just can't buy into it.
The things you need to think about, progression of rookies and also staying healthy. Those are the biggest parts of your football team. It is the Overnight here on Sports Radio 99 The Game, along with Thomas Mott, Will Polacek here with you. We'll come back. Story that broke about 12 hours ago, continuing to receive reaction throughout the National Football League. None of it, I think, is good, and I think all of it at least lends itself to some very deep discussion about where is the NFL on the issue of domestic violence. Will Polacek, Thomas Mott here with you inside the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 99 The Game and 99thegame.com. Back inside the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta, this is the Overnight. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Will Polacek, Thomas Mott. If you want to get in touch with us, 404-741-0929, either by phone or by the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. And, you know, Thomas, it was funny. We mentioned it about, again, and this broke literally about 12 hours ago, and you mentioned the fact that I was on the air in another time, in another city, in another station, and I didn't really have a lot of time to fully react to this while I read it on the air, but now having a chance to absorb it, I have to tell you, I'm very uncomfortable with the news that we heard today from the National Football League that involves Tyreek Hill not being suspended by the NFL's personal conduct policy, and I'm going to tell you why. I can't tell you beyond a shadow or beyond a reasonable doubt that a domestic assault happened with that young boy, but I can tell you what I heard on that tape.
Yes.
I can tell you that I heard Tyreek Hill threaten and say that you should be afraid of me to the mother of his child. Whether or not you think that he did anything wrong with the child is immaterial. The personal conduct policy outlines not only violence against women, violence against children, but also threatened violence against women and against children. And just I don't want to get to a point where we're policing private moments and things of that nature, but we saw the role that recorded audio and recorded video has played over the course of these types of situations in the past, and whether or not the woman's intentions were pure or not, or whether they were meant to extort, remains to be seen. I can't speak to the validity of that, but what I will say is I found just that entire thing very uncomfortable. I don't think either. I think that there's probably fault on both sides when it comes to the mistreatment of this young boy, which I think is most paramount when it comes to what we're dealing with and what we're talking about. Why I found it utterly sickening that Mecole Hardman is on Twitter saying, "Yes, sir," with Tyreek Hill's statement. Yeah, I don't like anything about this story at all. I'm not saying Tyreek Hill is completely innocent. I'm not saying he's completely guilty. But if you look at this and you see a story like this and you say that there's a winner, there are no winners in this story.
Well, and I think we've got to start with exactly what you said. we can't exactly comment on whether it happened or not, right? We are in we're not the police, and they did a police report.
And they have more to see than we do.
And they obviously saw more, and they did not, you know, essentially charge him with it. But we did hear an audio tape that was supposedly his voice saying some very, very, I can't even say questionable. Like that's
sketchy.
That sounds like too easy, right?
Sketchy.
Questionable thing. It's bad, right? And you sit there and you just go to the NFL. My question is, what's it like walking into the NFL offices in New York as a employee under Roger Goodell, who now has multiple cases of domestic violence, or, you know, similar cases? You know, Ray Rice, Greg Hardy comes to mind, Zeke Elliott, even though Zeke essentially, I mean, was not convicted as well. You take those three, all of them got suspensions and different types of suspensions. Greg Hardy, when his, I believe it was his fiance or his girlfriend had all the bruises where he was allegedly hit her, right? Got 4 games, right? And then Zeke last year didn't hit any sort of domestic violence, but was, you know, harassing that girl on the float, pulling her top down and all that other stuff that Zeke allegedly did. 6 games. And then Ray Rice with the video, essentially, I'm not going to say started the domestic violence stuff in the NFL, because stuff had happened before then, but that was the one that brought it to the forefront, where he, you know, essentially hit his wife in the elevator on the security footage, and we all saw it via TMZ, and he's never gone back in the NFL ever. We now have a case where, what do we do? Like, what's the rule in terms of, okay, if you go out and do this and you are not convicted, do you get no games, or do you get 4 games? Or do you get 6 games? Like, it's inconsistent. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the one thing that I think we all can agree on is that the policies are very, very much handled in the moment. Your old colleague, Nick Wright, basically said this proves that there really shouldn't even be a policy and the teams should be allowed to take this into their own hands. I'm not sure if I'm ready to go that route, because I do think that the policy, at least from the standpoint of its necessity, I think it's needed, but I don't believe it's being enforced in a way that I think is most pure. And the other part of this, too, that initially was brought up by the league, is that take the legal system out of it. Take anything involving, you know, whether someone's guilty or not guilty, or charges were pressed or not, because all of that is out the window in terms of the NFL's concern. The NFL has made very clear, at least in the past, before this situation, is that
Zeke Elliott, right?
Playing
example.
In this league is a privilege,
yep,
not a right, and that our standard should be above the legal standard. Well, if that is the case, then just that clause in the one part of the audio, I don't care if it's taken out of context or not, he threatened the mother of his child.
Well,
and again, I'm not excusing her. She's not exactly a saint when it comes to this video and this audio that was heard. We heard the whole 11-minute segment of the video, and neither of them comes off good. I almost feel like the Chiefs should have compelled Tyreek Hill, hey, take some time away, get your house in order. It's a mess.
Well, and think of it this way, too. What the NFL came out and did today by not giving him any sort of games and essentially saying that, you know, well, he wasn't charged with anything. He wasn't arrested. If that's your policy, then you need to state it, right? Like if that is your policy and you go, okay, these people can allegedly do these sort of crimes or do, you know, hit his child, hit your wife, beat up whoever, push someone in a parking lot. If you're not charged, then the NFL needs to come out and say, well, listen, if you're not charged, we won't do anything.
That doesn't hold water at all.
And it doesn't hold water at all, because at the same time, the NFL has said that even if you're not charged, as you just said, you can still be punished. And the problem is that I keep going back to is that we don't know what the rule is in terms of if you do something, what is the result going to be, right? Like, if you do this, is the result 6 games? Is the result permanent ban? Is the result 4 games? It's been so wishy-washy and so back and forth, and the Tyreek Hill one, the way that they reacted to it is like as if they said, hey, well, he wasn't arrested, so it doesn't matter. But you can't do that because you go back to Zeke.
Well, it's a weird thing, too, because there have been times where the players have cried out about the inconsistency, and now I wonder if there are some owners who are crying about that, namely Jerry Jones. And I think no one is happy about what's going on at 345 Park Avenue right now. 404-741-0929. Let's go to Jim, who's calling in Conyers. And Jim, you're on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How are you, Jim?
Pretty good.
What's up?
But I must say, on the college level and the NFL level, it has dropped the ball on it. you take Nick Saban, took a guy that got kicked out of the University of Georgia, pled out in court on a plea deal, and then Jonathan Taylor did it again before he could even play Alabama a third time. Him and a girl were both told, don't come back to court. Then he did it 6 or 7 months later. So he got away with it twice at Georgia because they couldn't believe him or the girl, and then stupid enough 6 or 7 months later to get kicked out. And then Nick Saban, after he got his tail handed to him by Ohio State, oh, we got to have that big guy. But Will Muschamp told Gus Malzahn, you can take him, but he won't play. Hmm. So you know if Auburn don't take somebody, boy, there's got to be a pretty good red flag. But then Auburn took Jared Stidham, one of the first ones that bought from Baylor. No, he didn't touch a girl. He just took pictures of them with their tops and bottoms off, which is about as bad. And then in the NFL, all the stuff that's happening like that, it's dropped everywhere in society.
Appreciate the call, Jim. You can go back to Tyreek Hill himself. Tyreek Hill himself was involved with this woman, and he allegedly punched her while pregnant and pled guilty. Now, he said after the fact, I only did that in order to try and, you know, avoid jail time and avoid a trial and avoid all that stuff. But, you know, in my mind, it just doesn't – I find all of this from the standpoint of whether or not this is a good thing. I feel very – again, the people who are celebrating this are being rather insensitive about it.
Before we go out to Eric in Decatur, and I see your phone call here, we got about four more minutes. It just seems so simple, and I know that the NFL has basically done this by, you know, stating their domestic violence policy. It just seems so simple, right?
Right.
Come out and literally have a short paragraph where you go, if you are allegedly involved in this and there is evidence in favor, right? If we have a video, if we have audio, 6 games, 8 games. 10 games, whatever you want to make it, and then just stick to it.
Right, I think a lot of these, again, a lot of these issues are so, there's a lot of gray area with a lot of these issues. So again, you can't make cut and dry, hard and fast regulations. But the problem is, you could still do that in a consistent manner and not do it the way that they're doing it currently. I mean, think about this, for example. Jim mentioned the college game.
Yeah.
Steve Spurrier, whether he was at Florida and he was in South Carolina, if somebody hit a woman, done.
Yep.
All over.
Yep.
Without even like so much of an appeal. So as a result, it's just, from me, maybe there needs to be a zero tolerance policy. 404-741-0929. We're talking about Tyreek Hill not being suspended by the NFL by virtue of the domestic violence policy and the personal conduct policy. Eric is calling in Decatur. He joins us on Sports Radio 99 The Game. Hello, Eric.
Hey, guys. Just listening, you know, to all of the narratives that's been spoken about this issue and him not being suspended, I just think that if those snippets that came out had not come out and you listened to the whole audio all together, I wonder if people would have a different take on this.
Well, they played the whole audio in Kansas City on Sports Radio 610 there. I mean, they played the whole thing, and that was basically, from the standpoint, people who had heard the initial snippet, who thought he was guilty, basically were rendered inconclusive after listening to the whole 11 minutes of audio unedited. But the problem here, Eric, is the fact that those clauses that were so troubling in that audio still existed.
Right, and those are, look, neither one of them is without fault. But,
agreed.
Again, the media and how we just, you know, those snippets compared to the full audio, those snippets were disgusting.
They were.
Those snippets, you know, the snippet on "You Should Be Scared of Me Too."
Yes,
yeah, it was hard,
you know,
to listen to.
Don't think, but when you listen to the whole audio, you get a much greater context. And my final point is, there's no way the NFL, with the light that is on domestic violence, is not going to do a thorough investigation. They don't care about suspending a player. Now, what they are about of is a consistency, but they don't care. They'll throw you 4 games real quick, but they're going to do a thorough investigation on the matter. And I just think that, you know, before we jump to any conclusions, we should have listened to the whole thing and seen that, okay, look, maybe he wasn't as guilty as those snippets made him seem.
Again, Eric, we went through that and said that, again, that the full audio makes the whole thing sound inconclusive, but it doesn't make anything about what Tyreek Hill did not sound disgusting. And again, that's kind of how we both feel. 404-741-0929. We'll take more on this. Get you a quick break and come back with NFL Quick Hits.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.